battre direct. Merci Bartos, Shimano avec Marcel Pittet, qui peut le mettre avec Marcel Pittet. On y cabinet avec Steven Durant et Danny Vinci. Qui peut remporter le même sur cette compétition. Et qui avec Angelette.
Hello and welcome to the humansinvent.com Tour de France podcast. I'm Richard Moore and I'm with, as ever, Daniel Freib.
Hi, Rich.
And Lionel Bernier.
Bonjour. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir. Lionel, do your usual. Tell us where we are. And I think you've been doing a bit of research this day, haven't you? Doping.
I've been doing location doping, yeah. We're sitting on the pavement outside the Palais des Sports in Lyon, which is just next to the finish line where today's stage finished, and over the other side of the road is the Stade Gerland, home of Olympique Lyonnais, one of the most dominant football teams in France. But the Palais des Sports, where we are, very hot, dusty, slightly oppressive press.
Is your bottom a little hot?
It's been a hot day.
I thought you meant the pavement was hot. It's hot as well.
It's hot in there.
It's been a hot tour.
It has been a hot tour. But the interesting fact about the Palais des Sports is that the French tennis team won the Davis Cup there in 1991.
Of course they did.
Who was playing? Can we name the line? It was Guy Forget playing. Henri Leconte,
Yannick Noah.
That's the team.
That's got to be the team.
It was Jim Courier, Michael Chang, and...
Oh, and I bet who else was playing? Cedric Pierley. I bet he was playing.
Anyway. Right, is this a tennis podcast?
Could be. We want to turn it into a tennis podcast.
Okay. Let's try and win a tennis audience, shall we? Welcome to the only tennis podcast to be launched after Wimbledon. No, there was a bike race today, chaps. And it was... It was the first stage that we can call kind of routine. Big breakaway. That's kind of disrespectful to the guys, the 18 riders who made it into breakaway, because it was a brutal start to the stage in terms of the pace. It was obviously pretty hard to get into that move. I was interested to see that David Miller was in it a year to the day after he won his stage in last year's tour. I spoke to him at the start, actually, and I'm not going to play it because he was really... He wasn't in the best of humour. I didn't think he was very, very focused on something. And I thought either he doesn't want to talk to me or he is focused on something.
Funny you mentioned people being focused this morning. There were a lot of riders warming up on rollers. Mikel Astoloza didn't do him a lot of good, the Euskaltel rider, because he wasn't in the break. But I think he had a bit of a go off the front. But five of the Orica Greenedge riders were warming up on rollers outside their bus half an hour before the start. Matt White told us that this stage and the one to Gap next week were the ones that they would be targeting, the Orica Greenedge team.
Well, that's not rocket science, though, is it?
Well, it's not. I mean, but, you know, the fact that they were taking it so seriously, yeah. The warm-up...
That's why Whitey is director. If he is. He's looked at the road book.
But as David Miller rolled past the Orica riders doing their warm-up, he did have a quizzical look on his face. And, I mean, it's interesting now, isn't it? We're seeing a lot more of this, riders warming up for what should have been, as you say, a fairly routine, flattish stage with a kick at the end. But the competition to get in that first break is intense now. I know we say it a lot, but that first hour of racing can be extraordinary to watch. Unfortunately, we didn't actually see it today, but it was clearly aggressive.
Do you think teams will start selling the dummy? Do you think they'll start getting warming up and just you know, bluffing? And I'm not sure what purpose that would have. It would be quite funny, wouldn't it?
It would be quite
funny. Whipping everyone into a frenzy.
A bit like when Tan Man started doing stretching exercises having a break during the podcast. I thought, what's he going to come back with in this next section? What's he going to hit us with? On the subject of Tan Man, he was sitting in the press room today in a vest. I got a picture of this. I'm going to tweet it. Yeah.
He kind of looked like he was turning kebabs on a barbecue. Actually, he was just punching another piece on green edge.
I got a picture. I got a picture of him kissing his guns at one point. I'm going to tweet that later. So, listen, today's stage, it was won by Matteo Trentin of Omega Pharma Quickstep. His first professional win, I believe. First Italian stage win since 2010. And first stage win by one of the traditional cycling countries, Spain, France, Italy, Holland. Belgium have won a stage already. So it was interesting from that point of view. You kind of want to see one of the teams that's not won a stage yet win it, but that doesn't tend to be how it rolls, is it? And a team, you know, there was no pressure on Trenton in that break at all. He did a hard day yesterday. He knew that his team, whether his team had a successful tour or not, didn't ride on how he performed. There was zero pressure on him. And I thought it was interesting, one or two of the other riders, you know, Julien Simon, the Soja Sun rider, who was away for quite a bit on his own, and seemed at one point like he might hold them off. And I think a lot of people were willing him on, because I did also take a picture of the media scrum outside the Soja Sun bus after the tour. That's certainly the first time that's happened. Arthur Vichot I was watching in the break, because he's, you know, very noticeable in his French champions jersey, and he was extremely eager, I would say too eager, and he jumped on everything. And on cue, look who's joining us. Ciro, you won.
Yes, I won.
Well, you
Italy won.
You did win, okay?
Yeah, I didn't cry as Cavendish, because I read that Cavendish had tears for...
Yeah, you know, Cavendish has cried in every Tour de France he's taken part in.
Ah, so he said that is the first time that he cried for a victory of his teammates.
Really?
Well, in this this marvelous podcast,
sure
we have the luck to have his,
not
ghost
sure that.
Here. His ghost.
I think he cried last year when Bradley Wiggins won the tour. I think.
But did he?
For different reasons.
For different reasons. Ciro, so, a great day for Italy, though.
Great day, especially because it's one. A really talented guy.
How do you know him? How well do you know him?
Quite well. Last Italian victory in the Tour de France was by Alessandro Petacchi 3 years ago, more or less, and he has already 36 years. Mm. Trentin has 24 years. He's really well considered in the group of Omega Quickstep, that we know that is one of the best teams in the world, especially for the classics. For the Belgian classics.
Is he 23 or 24? I've just written that he was 23.
24, if I'm not wrong, right, or okay. Almost 24, because he was born in 1989.
Okay.
And
wow.
he's also a clever guy. I mean, he's almost finishing his studies in science of sports, only two exams to arrive to the finish. And so, yes, for Italy, it's really something that we deserve.
Oh yes, of course. What
because we are really patriotic, also the English. Yeah. Or,
and I saw you on TV there asking him questions. You appeared on TV asking him questions at the end there.
You know,
is that another extra role that you have?
I mean,
moonlighting.
As you can imagine, I'm not only a journalist of the written press. I'm really eclectic. How do you say in English?
Well, you're a podcaster. Okay. You're a man of many talents.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. As a rider, capable as Chris Froome.
You're a bit of an
I mean, he's good
Chris
in
Froome.
Climbs,
you're
but...
You're Chris Froome of the press room.
I don't want to say that I'm the Chris Froome of this post or of this post podcast, but anyway.
You've had a really nice haircut as well, Ciro. You're shorn.
I'm really happy also for this today, because you asked me about my haircut.
Yes.
I understand. Yes, because this near this finish line, it was there was a marvelous
barber, hairdresser,
coiffeur, exactly, coiffeur, or barbiere, as we say in Italy. Mm. And so, yes, marvelous day till now.
Everything's gone really well. Till now. What did you make of the stage, Lionel?
Well, I was one of those that thought that Julien Simon...
Are you off, Ciro?
Oh.
Are you going? You look like... Sorry.
Whatever you want. Like a house cat about to scarper.
Yeah, whatever you want.
What was I saying? Julien Simon.
Yeah.
I thought he did really well. I mean, 15 kilometres from the finish he went. He had those three climbs to go over, and he got caught right under the 1K... banner, and he gave it everything he had, and you know, it's tough to say a rider deserves something just because they've tried, but that was quite an extraordinary effort. It's not often that we see a rider hold off a group that size, which had several teams represented by more than one rider, so there were cards to play in that in that second group, and it was a real effort to catch him back. And it would have done the French, you know, a world of good the day before Bastille Day to win a stage. And, you know, you just wonder what the future holds for Simon. He's got a nice style, but I fear he'll probably sign for Cofidis and we'll never see him again.
Yeah, I thought Albasini made a bit of a hash of it. He jumped up to Burghardt, who caught Simon, and then he went again. And I thought if he just sat there for a bit longer and left it, I think they'd caught Simon at that point. And he jumped. I don't know why he jumped again. And according to Trenton, it was quite a headwind coming up the finishing straight as well. So I think he messed that one up. He was still second, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to be patient in those situations. Yeah. Isn't it? And that's what Trenton was. It was a typical performance of a guy who's riding for a team who's already had a lot of success on the tour. And I think he went under the radar a bit. Everyone was talking about Rojas being very quick. Trentin is almost a sprinter himself.
Yeah.
You know, he's the third man from the end of Mark Cavendish's sprint train. So he comes before Gert Stegemans and a very quick rider.
Is Julien Simon a young Frenchman that you're interested in, Daniel?
He's not that young. I think Julien Simon's about 27, 28, but he's won some really good races in the past couple of years. A sort of typical puncher, very good on uphill sprints, actually. But I thought he did everything right today. You couldn't really ask for any more. There was a lot of talk on French TV, should he have waited, should he have gone later? But, you know, his logic was perfect, that he thought that with one guy down the road, the others would start looking at each other, and one guy on his own did have a chance, and it really did. And he was caught, I think, with 900 to go. So he came very close.
And, you know, a lot of very valuable publicity for his team. You know, so it was certainly worth doing. We did spend quite a lot of today still dissecting, I think, yesterday's stage, didn't we, Lionel? And, you know, the crosswind stage. And I think you spoke to Brian Holm at the start this morning. And do you want to tell us anything about that? Or will we just hear from...
Well, yeah, Brian, I just wanted to know how they formulated their plan, because they were in that front group yesterday with numbers. Cavendish kind of just about made it across, which would have completely changed the dynamic of the race had he not made it. And then they had those, as we said yesterday, those cards to play. So I wanted to know from Brian, you know, who formulates that plan. Also, I wanted to just get a little bit of a steer from him about how today would pan out. It's notable that he didn't say that they were expecting to win again today.
We should add that Brian Holm is the sports director at Omega Pharma Quickstep, and here he is.
Yesterday's stage 13 was unlucky for some, but not for your team. You took the bull by the horns, so to speak, and made the race happen. We've heard that Omega Pharma and Belkin hatched this plan in the hotel the previous night. Is that true?
Put it this way, we're sharing hotel together, yes.
I mean, that's one thing that people watching the tour perhaps for the first time don't appreciate, is that when you've got a common goal, it makes sense to join forces with another team to make things happen in the race.
Somehow, you know, like Belkin is Dutch team from the, what you call it, lower countries, pretty good in crosswind, real Belgium team. I mean, we're not fantastic in the climbs and the mountains, our team, so we have to choose our battles. And we kind of knew with the big guys from Belkin, I mean, not much to talk about, is it? You know, we know the difficult points, 56 kilometers yesterday, 117 could split up, so it did. So it was a bit early, wasn't it, like starting already after 56 kilometers, but like when the snowball was starting rolling, you couldn't hardly stop it again. Kittel was hanging on 40 seconds, coming back to 7, speeded it up again. Valverde punctured, he was 20 seconds behind for like 20 kilometers. Should we wait for him, or did Kittel chase him down? So there was two teams behind us. It was a bit difficult yesterday, but at the end of the day, you know, after 117, they came back to 30 seconds. I mean, you after the city crosswind speeded up. At that moment, it was everything or nothing. And of course, Belkin was riding for the GC. And we was riding for the stage wind. And it was a tough, tough day for everybody. And I think one of the best stages in the tour so far.
A lot of people, they know Mark Cavendish as the fastest sprinter in the world, but he's a bike racer as well.
I can tell you, when you've been winning 25 stages in Tour de France, you've been world champion, then you're something special, no doubt about it. Making that 14 riders break in the final again, I mean, it shouldn't really surprise anybody, should it? I mean, Cav, he's one of the best cyclists ever. I mean, and somehow he's a bit more than just a sprinter. You know, we saw him up Glasgow getting British champion, quite hilly parcours, you know, coming home with to the finish, to the sprint with Dave Miller, Jens Starnert, after a bloody hard race. So he really got it, Kev, no doubt about it.
In the finish, but you still had Peter Sagan to worry about. You had several cards to play, but it really impressed me how you went about that. Who makes that call? Was that the riders themselves, or are you giving a bit of help from the car?
I would love to take the honour for that one. Never funny to coming to the finish line with a little green devil like Peter Sagan. It's quite nasty, to be honest. All the credit for that tactics go to Kev. Last 10 kilometres, I almost never speak on the radio. I wouldn't say a word. I just stress them more. They got the legs. They feel the wind direction. I give the last information 20 kilometres before, and then it's up to the riders to adjust the last 10 kilometres. They know every roundabout, like their own pockets. Basically, we told them everything, so it's up to the riders. And Terpstra and Kev made up that little master plan.
What do you expect to happen today?
We got them those small climbs in the final. I think 70% of the bunch not going to win a bunch sprint, so they have to go today. So a lot of French Queen teams going to be ballistic today to get in the breakaway. Then we have to consider Sagan. It's a good stage for Sagan, for Kittel, for Greivel, or maybe even for Kev. So maybe the sprinters team they're gonna calculate who's in the break, what's gonna happen. Maybe the sprinter team's even gonna join the breaks today because they don't really want to work the whole day. So they're gonna watch each other, and what could happen? Normally the break gonna go like 15 riders because it's a bit of puzzle in the start. It's not easy to get in that break today. Normal flat stages, 2 kilometer, 5-6 riders away, no problem. So they're gonna be nasty to catch the break. And then everybody calculating, we put in one rider to chase, it's going to be too difficult, but why not? I mean, tomorrow more 1-2, for sure. Again, 80% of the team not going to win tomorrow. We know that before we start. So I think a lot of team put everything on today, and that could be a very, very interesting battle today.
It seems to me that we're witnessing a bit of a change, the importance of the team. Do you think that's a trend that we're witnessing?
Oh, yes, for sure. Like the Marginals riders winning nowadays, when they win, it's going to be smaller and smaller. I mean, everybody more even, you know, in a bunch sprint. Team time trial was beaten by a half a second. And so teamwork is actually, you know, getting more and more important because all the wind, I mean, we were quite close a few times to a second. And for the same money, you know, we was also winning with very small margins again. That's why teamwork is more and more important.
You're listening to the Tour de France podcast with humansinvent.com and Sharp.
And that is the sound of Ciro working. Tap, tap, tap.
That is the La Gazzetta dello Sport for tomorrow in the making, isn't it?
It is. It's been constructed before our eyes.
Brick by Such brick, word by word.
Brick by brick, indeed. Yeah. Right, let's talk a little bit, guys, about tomorrow. We're going to talk about Mont Ventoux, Bastille Day. A million people heading for 1-2. We read that every time, don't we, Daniel? These numbers are I'm not sure they're entirely accurate. But anyway, quite a few people I'd imagine be heading there. It's a tremendous stage in store, especially after, you know, what's happened the last week. What are your thoughts?
I think it'll actually be quite boring.
Oh dear.
Well, I think from a tactical point of view, it will be quite boring. Sky will do what they did last year, basically. They will be able to lead it to the bottom of the climb.
You think they're even strong enough? I mean,
I would say so.
Yes.
It'll be interesting. I mean, will they get to the Chalet Reynard? Does it come after 11 kilometres?
As the author of Mountain High.
Well, I would have. Yeah, I should have swatted up before I came on. But so it's. I think the Ventoux. I think is 19 kilometres, and so it would come after 12. I would imagine that that would almost be their finish line. Certainly, or they would maybe want to have Richie Porte and Froome still. Together by the time they get to Chalet Reynard, then the climb becomes a bit easier. But that, I think, will be their fairly straightforward tactic tomorrow. There might be a break down the road, and a break might actually provide the winner tomorrow. But
I know what you're saying in terms of you know, our expectations are very high, perhaps after Friday. You know, I think we saw in the mountains last week that they can kill the race. You know, Movistar had men up there, but having men there and being able to attack are two different things. Michael Rogers, one of the real instigators on Friday, I can't see him holding on all the way up Vontu to be able to make a difference. So, you know, it is a different scenario.
Does a lot not depend on the wind and whether it's blowing? Because in 2009 we were really excited about the whole tour coming down to Mont Ventoux, and there was a quite a stiff headwind, and it neutralised the GC race anyway. It was Galate and Tony Martin. Contesting the stage, and Juan Manuel Galate won that stage, but behind it was a real sort of battle of survival, particularly once they came out of the trees, because the road is in one direction, wind, and it's so exposed, the wind is actually quite a big factor. It's been blustery obviously yesterday, it's still a bit blustery today. There's kind of nothing to stop the wind.
It will always be hundreds windy up there.
I think it'll be crosswinds and echelons.
it just depends what direction it's coming from tomorrow, and that will basically decide how the race turns out. I don't think anyone's expecting Froome to have any support from about the point Daniel's talking about. It, you know, Port would be the one you would think would go deeper, but
he's been erratic, hasn't he?
And the talk this morning from one or two people was that they don't expect him to be up there.
Based on last Saturday, you'd think he would be up there. He looked last Saturday to be the second strongest climber in the race. A little dark horse I'd like to mention, Jakob Fuglsang of Astana. I was speaking to their press officer this evening, and he was saying Fuglsang's only ever raced up Mont Ventoux once, in the Dauphiné in 2009, and he was second up there, which is an interesting little precedent. I can't remember who was first, 2009. He did tell me, but I've forgotten.
Menchov?
I'm not sure if it was Menchov.
Okay. But they have to score heavily tomorrow, Sky, because tomorrow's the most straightforward stage. Tomorrow's the stage that will probably suit them best. This is the stage where they're least exposed to the kind of thing that happened last Sunday. So I would think Froome will want to take a minute tomorrow, and that will provide some comfort ahead of the much more complicated Alpine stages next week.
Chiro, what are your thoughts about Mont Ventoux?
Last time that the tour was at Mont Ventoux was 4 years ago, if I'm not wrong, and Galate won. I remember that the stage was not so exciting, but I hope that tomorrow it will be different. I think that Chris Froome should give some seconds, also some minutes to his rival, because for the moment he in the one-to-one in the climbs has been the best. But maybe in the last stages the team hasn't shown the same strength that he had in the first stages. So he has already an advantage on his rival, but I think that he will try to attack.
Great, you've done a brilliant job of summing up what we just said, Chiro. Brilliant. Well done. That's good. It means that Gazzetta is going to be authoritative and on the money tomorrow.
It's good to be basically backed up by a newspaper
such
of such great standing.
Distinguished and respected correspondent. Sorry, Chiro. Carry on. Carry on with your work.
For me, it's not easy to distinguish my article, my opinion about the Mont Ventoux, and all the other stuff that happens in this tour.
You're spreading yourself too thin, aren't you?
I hope not to do confusion, but...
So, as we mentioned, tomorrow's Bastille Day as well. Maybe a day for Thibaut Pinot. Daniel's been talking all tour excitedly about...
He's got flu. I think he might be out the race tomorrow.
Oh, my God. It's all been about tomorrow for him until now.
Can you imagine how Maddio is going to react to that?
Dear.
Yeah, I can actually.
Well, okay. Is there any other Frenchman who might win tomorrow?
Moncoutier? Oh no, he's retired. Veronk?
Roland.
Roland, yeah.
Louise on Bobby?
Possibly.
He's got a chance. Well, anyway, I spoke this morning in the Start Village to Gilles Simon, who is cycling editor for L'Équipe, the founding newspaper. It was L'Auto until the Second World War, and it was reborn as L'Équipe after the Second World War, and they have run the race since 1903, pretty much. So obviously he's got a very important position in French journalism. Some interesting figures about just how many copies L'Équipe sells. One thing I forgot to ask him is how many people they have here, but it's a good number, isn't it?
It's about 5 or 6.
Actual reporters, and photographers and people like that. They've got drivers as well, do they not? Yeah.
They have a bagagiste, which is someone who just carries their bags.
Wow, we don't have that, do we?
No, we don't. Maybe next year.
Anyway, yeah.
They used to have a fairly rotund chap called Ludo, who was also absolutely delightful. And he would greet you. He would just be lurking on the edge of the, or at the door to the press room. And he would always ask, have you seen the buffet? That was always, they were always his first words. Have you seen the buffet? Have you been to the buffet? He was very worried that everyone was, you know, he was very concerned.
I think I'm a bit like that now. Yeah, that's often my first question. Anyway, here is Gilles Simon, who I spoke to in the Start Village this morning, the cycling editor of L'Équipe. So Gilles Simon, you are the cycling editor at L'Équipe. How long have you done that job now?
It's my fifth year in that job, fifth Tour de France this year.
And is cycling still a very important sport for L'Équipe?
Still a very important sport, and overall Tour de France is very important. It's something special in our season.
I mean, in the old days, we remember hearing stories of how sales of L'Équipe or Lauto before that would go up so spectacularly during the Tour. Is that still the case? The sales of the paper increase during the Tour?
It depends, the interest of the race. This year, for us, it's the biggest event of 2013. How things are going is very well for us, very, very good for us, because sales are very good, because the race is very spectacular.
Does the race need a French winner? Would that really make a difference in France and to L'Équipe as well, or not?
Of course it makes a difference, but we're waiting for a French winner so long that it becomes to be different. If the race is very spectacular, interest of our readers is increasing. But it will be very important for us to get a French rider who can be able to win the Tour de France. Maybe not to win it.
I mean, last year we had Thibaut Pinot's spectacular stage win, and the year before that, Thomas Vogler in the yellow. At times like that, do you see a spike in sales of the paper?
Of course. When Vogler was in yellow, it was incredible for us. Sales were very important. And we were very hopeful on Thibaut Pinot this year, but very disappointed too.
I mean, how many copies a day does L'Équipe sell?
In the last week, it was something like 250,000.
A day?
A day.
And how does that compare to normal?
It's something like 60,000 copies more than the average number.
Wow. Some newspapers in Britain only sell 60,000 copies a day. When do you think we'll see a French winner, and who do you think it will be?
I hope it will be Thibaut Pinot. Maybe we need to wait 2 or 3 years more, but I'm very confident. I'm sure he can do something great.
The Tour de France with humansinvent.com. Innovation, craftsmanship and design.
Okay, here we go with the final part of tonight's podcast, coming from Lyon, and a very hot pavement outside a sports arena in which France won the Davis Cup in 1991.
That's right.
We've got to run through a few things. Got to remind you of our competition to win a phone call from Jonathan Vauters. It's getting very noisy here all of a sudden. And Daniel's doing some push-ups. Good. So, yeah, you can win a phone call from Jonathan Vauters. I got the competition a little bit wrong when I announced this last night. In fact, if you can answer the following question: what was Jonathan Vauters' nickname when he was a rider? What was his nickname when he was a rider? Tweet your answer with the hashtag. I don't know the answer. Hashtag Vauters Call. Hashtag Vauters Call. And if you tweet at Humans Invent with your answer, the winner will receive. The closing time is midday on Monday, I think. No, I'm not sure when the closing time is. Just do it, and you'll get a phone call on Monday from Jonathan Vauters at some point. I did say yesterday to tweet a hashtag Tour Moment to enter this competition. That was incorrect, but we'll have a competition, and I'll offer a couple of books.
You'll chuck in a couple as well. The gentleman who's correctly guessed something, I can't remember what the question
stage
was.
Stage winner,
he will get those two books.
Do we know who that was yet, Daniel? Because that was a couple of days ago.
It was a very nice gentleman with a Spanish-sounding name, but I can't really remember Rich, and I will endeavour to find out and send him those two books.
Daniel's falling behind a bit with his admin, I think.
Yes.
So, well, like, hashtag tour moment, best one will win. We'll select a few and you'll win a copy of my book Tour de France 100 and a copy of the cycling anthology.
Both cycling anthologies, volume 1 and 2.
Volume 1 and 2, brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to hear from Ciro again.
And now, Pedaleur de Charme.
Okay, that was Ciro, who is rather spookily also sitting beside me as well as coming through our jingle for the Pedaleur de Charme Award. Okay, I'll start with my nomination today.
I'm
excited about this. All right, so standing at the start, and Alberto Contador went zipping past, and spotted a young child in the crowd with a homemade cardboard kind of poster thing dedicated to El Pistolero, his nickname. Contador kind of gone past this, slammed on his brakes, turned round, screeched a halt, turned round, went back to the kid, signed some stuff for him. It was very friendly, nice smile. Pedaleur de Charme for me, Alberto Contador today. That's Cadel Evans yesterday, Alberto Contador today. Incredible.
It's taking it couldn't take a less predictable turn, this competition, could it? Do we want an anti-Pedaleur de Charme?
Oh, yes, somebody actually tweeted a Pedaleur sans charme. A Graham Farr said, much as I love Hoogerland, I wish to nominate him for Pedaleur sans charme. He makes the smoothest tarmac seem like pavé.
Well, I was going to nominate both Hoogerland and Damiano Cunego today because what were they doing in trying to get across a 48-minute gap to the lead group?
You exaggerated slightly.
Well after it had gone. Hoogerland, I think that's a bit harsh because, you know, he has to ride every Tour de France wrapped up like a mummy. He's got bandages on his arm again. He's fallen off.
Hit by cars.
I think he's had a very smooth pedalling style knocked out of him by all those crashes.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, any nominations for Pedaleur de Charme or Pedaleur sans charme?
Simon looked pretty good. Mm. Someone took umbrage on Twitter at me calling him a budget Zsa Zsa. But he kind of looked, you know, he was styled. It was a compliment.
He looked more like Nicolas Jalabert, I thought. Same colouring and stuff as well.
Really?
Yeah, chunky as well. Like, yeah, quite slightly chunky. Yeah, Nicolas Jalabert was like a kind of Jalabert light as well.
Yeah,
a budget Jalabert.
Yeah, yeah. And
there already is a budget. It would be offensive if he was a budget Nicolas Jalabert.
That would be really bad.
Because Nicolas was already a budget Jalabert,
exactly.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
As regards Cunego, what he was doing, I think he was trying to get Johnny's autograph, Hoogerland's autograph. That's the only thing I can
do. Actually, well, let's ask Ciro. Ciro, what was Cunego doing today?
Cunego, yes, our big point mark,
question mark.
Yes, he tried to keep the breakaway, but he hadn't the possibility to do it. I must confess, I had the intention to talk to him after the finish line, mm-hmm. but this victory of Matteo Trentin was enough for us.
So you had a date set up with Damiano Cunego and you dumped him for Trenton when he won the stage. Is that pretty much what happened?
Exactly. It's not maybe so fair, but it's happening.
How will Cunego respond to that?
I don't know. And maybe if in this Tour de France he will be able to win a stage, maybe he won't speak to me.
Do you think that's very likely?
It's not likely, but we never know.
Into Gap maybe is another chance for him.
As I told you, it's not my opinion. It's difficult. My bet is that Cunego won't win a stage in this Tour.
Do you think he'll make the top 40 on general classification? Because that's what we're all waiting with bated breath
now
to find out.
In which position of the 40, overall?
I think he's 46th at the moment.
Yes, in the first 40.
In the first 40, brilliant.
In my opinion, yes.
Okay, first Italian rider, maybe.
Thanks a lot.
Do you have any nominations for Pedaleur de Charme today? It's your award, so...
What does it mean?
Shira, you announce this every day on our podcast. You got to know what it means. It can mean just the most stylish rider or the most charming rider.
Ah, yeah. Sorry, I didn't understand, but yes, I have a nomination.
Sorry, somebody's just skating past.
Yeah.
It might be the Omega Pharma Quick-Step team. They've been looking like skateboarders the last few days with their caps on.
David Miller is my
Pedaler
nomination.
Pedaler Charm.
Yeah.
Yeah? You're a fan of his pedaling style?
Yeah, I'm a fan of him. Because I remember that some years ago, when he won the last time trial in the Giro in Milan, maybe in 2011, I guess, I did an interview with him, and he offered me a bottle of champagne.
Oh, well.
And so I have to thank David Miller also in this way to give this domination.
Why did he offer you a bottle of champagne?
I don't know. He was happy, simply happy to talk. He say, okay, let's talk with a bottle of champagne. I say, why not?
So did you share the bottle of champagne while you did the interview?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay, right, excellent. I hope you did better with that than you did with the beer that we bought you in on the old Mega Smeralda all that time ago.
I remember well, but here, no beers.
No beers here.
No, okay.
So we're all serious.
It's a choice. Okay,
okay, I think we're going to wrap up this podcast. We're looking ahead tomorrow, looking forward tomorrow to Mont Ventoux. Maybe get Ciro back at some point. He's waving. Bye, Ciro.
Thanks a lot.
Cheerio.
Hi, Ciro. Listeners.
Yeah,
goodbye.
Cheerio. See you again. Okay, thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard. Are we going up onto the mountain tomorrow? Do we know yet?
We don't know yet, Lionel. Okay. We've got to work that one out. Daniel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Always a pleasure.